The fall of Constantinople in 1453. The reaction to the fall of Constantinople. Now, I'm going to do this several ways. We'll look at some general reaction this time, and we'll look at Venice in particular. And then as I go through with this part of the series, we'll look at Genoa next, and then Rome and the other smaller states, and see how they dealt with the situation and what effect it had on them. So this may be a little bit shorter because Venice wasn't as worse off as some of the other cities, such as Genoa. At any rate, on June the 9th, 1453, a Saturday, three ships sailed into the harbor of Candia in Crete. Two of them carried Cretan soldiers who had been the last to give up the fight at Constantinople. They brought with them the news that the city had fallen 11 days ago. Throughout the island, there was consternation. There has never been, and there never will be, a more dreadful happening, wrote a scribe at the monastery of Agrathos. Other refugees had reached the Venetian colonies of Chalcis and Modon, and their governors hastened to send messages to Venice. The messengers arrived there on June on the 29th. The Senate was hastily summoned, and the secretary read out the governor's letters to the horrified senators. The next morning, a courier left to carry the news to Rome. On July the 4th, he paused at Bologna to break the news to Cardinal Bessarion, who was in residence there. 4 days later, he was received in audience by Pope Nicholas V. Another courier had gone to Naples to warn King Alfonso of Aragon. It was not long before all Western Christendom had learnt that the great city was in infidel hands. The horror was all the greater because no one in the West had really expected it. Men knew the city was in danger, but immersed in their own local worries, they had not understood how acute the danger was. They had heard of its vast fortifications. They had heard, too, of the gallant companies that had set out to rescue the city and of the armada from Venice that was sailing eastward. They had not noticed how pathetically small was its garrison in comparison to the hordes of the Ottomans, nor that the Sultan was provided with artillery against no ancient wall could survive. Even the Venetians, for all their sources of information and their practical experience, had believed, as the Pope had believed, that the defense could well be maintained until relieving forces should arrive. I would point out that the Venetian diplomatic corps is one of the best spy groups of any city, state, or country at this particular time. They were all supposed to count ships, count troops, and do all sorts of other things. Now, in fact, the Venetian galleys, which the Pope had helped to equip, had reached the coast of Chios and were anchored there awaiting a favorable wind when the Genoese ships that had escaped from Pera sailed up to tell them that it was too late. The Venetian admiral, Lordan, promptly moved his fleet back across the Aegean to Chalcis until new orders should arrive from Venice. He received those orders in mid-July. On July the 4th, the Collegio, the Doge's special privy council, was summoned to an extraordinary session. Ludovico Diedo, captain of the galleys at Constantinople, had arrived the previous day, and he now gave an eyewitness account of the disaster. Government decided upon a policy of prudence, while orders were sent to the governors of Crete, of Chalcis, and of Lepanto, telling them urgently to see that their defenses were sound and to lay in provisions against a possible Turkish attack. A letter was dispatched on July the 5th to Lordan, inviting him to prepare a ship to take the ambassador, Bartolomeo Marcello, who was still with him, to the Sultan's court. A week later, the Senate voted to provide Marcello with the sum up to 1,200 ducats to be used as presents for the Sultan and his ministers. On July the 17th, full instructions were transmitted to Marcello. He was to tell the Sultan that Venice had no wish to cancel the treaty made between the Republic and the Sultan Murad II. He was to demand the release of the galleys captured in the Golden Horn, none of which, he must emphasize, were warships. If the Sultan refused to renew the treaty on the old terms, he must refer back to Venice, but if the Sultan seemed amenable, he must press for the return of Venetian merchants to Constantinople with the privileges that they had enjoyed under the Byzantines, and he also must secure the release of all Venetian prisoners held by the Turks. A few days later, permission was given by the Senate for the son of Venetian Bailey Minotto to go to Constantinople to arrange for the ransom of his father, his mother, and his brother. Now, he may have rescued his mother, but the other two were dead. About the same time, it was decreed that the money and possessions lodged by Greeks in Venetian ships, which had survived the disaster, were to be confiscated and used to pay the debts still owing to Venetians by the Greeks. Venice needed what reparation she could find. Her losses at Constantinople were estimated at 200,000 ducats, and another 100,000 ducats had been lost by her Cretan subjects as well. Well, if it's one thing we can always count on, that is the Venetians making sure they make a profit or make money off of anyone's misery. So since the Greeks lost and the Greeks owed the money, we'll take all of the property in our possession and we'll just use it for ourselves and what we had loaned them before. So Venice is pretty consistent. It is an oligarchy of the best businessmen in the city, and they want to make money. And trade is important. And the old joke is that the Venetians will trade anything, relatives if necessary. So Venice is upset, but they're more worried about their business situation than anything else. So never let a Venetian's pride and faith in humankind stand between them and money, because the money will win all the time. I have done a series on the history of Venice. If you look at it on the website, it's quite fascinating, from its creation, the fall of the Roman Empire, all the way up until Napoleon ended the Republic in 1797, I believe it is. At any rate, next week we'll be looking at Genoa. They're in a particularly bad situation. The sources for this: The Short History of Byzantium by Norwich, The Fall of Constantinople in 1453 by Runciman, Byzantine Art of War by Decker, and Byzantine Armies 325 to 1453 by Bilazos. So I hope you enjoyed that. As always, don't forget to come by the website, summahistorica.com or historyaccordingtobob.com. Ask a question, leave a comment. Check out our list of CDs, which you can get as a USB or an SD card. I just have trouble not saying CDs, but we have those topics and titles that are available in just about any electronic format. You just can't download it directly. So thank you very much.